Welcome back to Brandon Wilborn's Fantasy Fiction, where fans of classic fantasy adventures can hear the serialized audiobooks of a fellow nerd and indie author completely for free. I'm your author, narrator, and host, Brandon Wilborn, and I want to thank you for listening this week. The story portion of this episode starts right after the recap. Last time in the Treasure of Capra, Kurian heard the king's story. Tobin and the others became honored guests at camp, but their celebration was cut short when Fallon arrived at the gate. Back in the cave, the king showed Kurian a captivating vision. This week I'll finish reading chapter 24. Following that, I'll get back to sharing a word of wisdom, which hasn't happened in a while. This one will be on courage. Now I present for your enjoyment The Treasure of Capric.
4 hours passed after the horn first sounded outside the gates. The horn had blown 3 more times, and with each blast, Tobin expected to see Captain Fallon come out with a long string of soldiers, emerging like a serpent from its lair. Still, the watchers at the gate had not seen any sign of Fallon or the hornblower. He glanced once more over the archway of rock that stood above the gate, where he perched on a carved ledge. From there, he looked over the wide natural courtyard he had passed through the evening before. Nothing. Dark had fallen shortly after the first horn, and the bonfires now behind him made it impossible to see in the blackness outside. He stepped back and shook his arms, looking at the basket of heavy stones that he was supposed to rain down on enemies approaching the gate. This was a job for Rhys's strength, not his small limbs. Helping to determine strategy would have been a better task for him, but as soon as the threat was present, Noman had volunteered them for any hole in the defenses. No. He was letting his nerves cloud his judgment. They had all volunteered, and he most eagerly. In a strange moment of decisiveness, he felt brave enough to step forward for these people because he had seen their gentle kindness, and he hoped for a peaceful future in such a place. Fallon and Evasius threatened that. If nothing else, he wanted to fight to protect the innocent children who lived and played in the camp. Right now, they were going with the oldest and weakest to safety in a remote cavern. Louise had left camp with them, without saying goodbye. If he thought clearly and ignored the jitters, he was right where he ought to be. Dropping heavy stones was something he could keep up for hours with his strength. Rhys's greater bulk, bravery, and skill at fighting helped more on the ground to brace the gate or repel soldiers who broke through. Tobin could continue dropping stones on the backs of those who breached the gate, and Noman was the one who should counsel Xander and the other leaders. Still, he wished the terrible waiting would end. It was worse than the ambush at the apple grove, because he saw no possibility of talking their way out of armed conflict. Hiding along the ledge with him were a half dozen archers, all that the camp could arm, and one other man with a basket of stones. Between him and the other man were 3 boys, younger than he was, between 12 and 13. Armed with buckets and barrels, their job was to pour water through sluices cut into the stone arch that would help douse any flames that caught on the wooden gate. Tobin didn't want to think of how uncomfortable it would become on the archway if the gate caught fire. The boy next to him chewed on his lip and gave an overconfident smile when Tobin caught his eye.
"Don't be afraid," the boy whispered. "The king will save us before it gets too bad. None of Evasius' soldiers has ever stood up to him. And I was trying to think of a way to reassure you," Tobin said.
Again, he was surprised at the depth of trust these people had in their leader, and he admired the kid's bravery. Silently, he prayed that bravery and trust would be enough.
"Any sign?" Xander called up from below. "It's too dark to see anything," the lead archer replied.
Xander gave an order, and the archers threw several lit torches into the darkness. In their small circles of light, they revealed only bare ground.
"Nothing,"
the archer said. Xander nodded.
"I still think it's safe to assume that Evasius's man has found us and is gathering a force to attack."
Noman's voice came faint against the wind picking up atop the gate. Then an answer to the torches came. Thunk, went the first arrow that slammed into the gate. It hit so hard, Tobin thought he felt it under his feet. The next 3 thudded into the wood in quick staccato, and everyone ducked below the wall. No report from the archers was necessary after that sound. Xander leaped forward, his thin, aged form silhouetted in the firelight.
"Archers ready!"
Six bows creaked as they drew taut. Tobin heard the soldiers before he dared peek out to see them. The sound of marching poured out from the narrow crack and echoed in the natural amphitheater. He looked at Rhys, who raised his staff in one of his signs of encouragement. Then he finally lifted his eyes over the edge. The serpent he feared was coming around the corner of the gorge. Their shields shone dimly in the torchlight, and they held them close together, covering each other so that they truly appeared like an enormous scaled beast. They were only able to fit two men abreast through the narrow crack, so it was impossible to tell how many waited to file through. The serpent might be long enough to swallow the small camp whole. As they reached the threshold of the gorge, the first two pairs spread across the opening in a V-shape and planted their shields low. Three more stepped behind them to cover their heads and created a diamond that formed the snake's head. Behind them, Tobin saw Fallon standing without cover, as if he rode the monster. At such a close range, even a poor archer could take him down. It showed a confidence that was both foolish and terrifying. It was too far to see the expression on his face, but Tobin imagined it held the same condescending boredom that confronted him and Kurian in the briny mug. When that face loomed in his dreams, he realized the expression was a thin veil for unquestioning loyalty and depthless malice. The captain behaved as if killing them would be a waste of his time and skill.
"Hello," Fallon's voice boomed from the hollow. "I am Captain Nicholas Fallon, leader of the personal guard of Lord Farron of Asius, ruler of Pollingham. I will speak to whomever is in charge."
Xander stepped to one of the arrow slits that flanked the gate and shouted through it,
"You are above the Northland cliffs, Captain. If Pollingham has power here, then up is down and dark is light."
"My presence and that of my soldiers says otherwise, stranger. Please tell me your name, and whether we have found the camp of the criminal known as the King of the Caves."
"Aye, this is the king's camp, and I am his servant, Xander."
"Three monks came to your camp recently,"
Fallon said, obviously beginning his same rough attempt at negotiations that he had had in the tavern.
"Tell your master that he may hand them over, along with the treasure he took from them, and I will spare everyone else behind your gate."
"You mean until you can return with a larger force to root us out?"
Xander said in the same way that he had so frustrated the dean.
"I believe I have a large enough force already. Yet I am willing to avoid unnecessary bloodshed, if he is."
"My master is tenacious. He does not relinquish what he has claimed as his own."
A few of the archers on the wall chuckled to themselves. Tobin did not comprehend Xander's strategy yet, but he was grateful he was protecting them instead of handing them over. His quirky answers were confusing or frustrating the captain, who was probably used to more formal battlefield negotiations. The laughter lightened Tobin's mood.
"These would be good men to fight beside, and dying with them would be honorable."
The thought shocked him, and for the first time he began to think he might have as much courage as Kurian or Rhys.
"If you refuse my offer, you will see how much power Evasius wields in this hellish waste," the captain yelled.
"And if you try to overcome the king's men with arms,"
Xander almost sang,
"you will see that his command is over more than just a few canyons and caves."
The men inside the gate shouted in defiance of the invaders, and then began singing a hymn of victory against overwhelming odds. In tune and lyrics, it was nearly identical to one of the battle hymns Tobin learned at the compound. Hearing it sung in the face of enemies roused a will to fight within his spirit, and he knew that they had made the right decision to help. In that moment, he almost understood the dean's growing infatuation with these people. Then he heard the order roared from outside the walls that made everything else disappear.
"Fire!"
Fallon's lips pulled back in a satisfied snarl when the first wave of flaming arrows slammed into the gate and silenced the singing. He was glad it had come to a fight. For weeks he had desired an open struggle instead of the endless hiding and chasing. Now there would be fire and blood, and if he had his way, plenty of both. He raised his own shield just in time to catch the first volley of arrows from the archers above the gate. The weight of the arrows slammed the shield against his shoulder with satisfying force. Immediately it set the thrill of battle coursing through his blood, and the intense focusing of his senses allowed him to see everything. First he saw the water pouring down over the gate and extinguishing the arrows lodged there. So their fortifications were not entirely primitive. Next he saw a single shaft flying past his head and piercing the leg of the man behind him.
"Hunker down," he shouted. "Shields up. They only have a few bowmen, and we can wait them out."
Of course he was right. The archers sent only 3 more volleys and then quit. They most likely had no arrows to waste, and wanted to wait for a clear shot.
"Bring forward the horse," he told his lieutenant.
The order passed down the line, and the men stood to either side as a heavily laden horse strode forward. The smell wafting from the creature made his eyes water as it passed. From its head to its haunches hung dripping blankets that reeked of the oily resin that Muna had created on Admiral Shay's ship. More of the stuff was in thick earthen jugs slung over its back. In normal circumstances, he would consider it a waste to sacrifice a healthy animal, but he had no time to spare, and he could not risk men by attacking the gate directly. The animal gazed at him with wild eyes, and its nostrils flared as it wavered on the verge of panic. He only needed it to remain in control for a moment longer. As soon as the horse was ahead of his front line, it saw the dying torches at their flanks and reared. He swatted its hindquarters with the flat of his sword, and it launched itself into the open space. The defenders did exactly as he expected. With a galloping horse heading directly for them, presumably with a rider, they fired a barrage of arrows. The horse stumbled, flipped end over end, and slid to a stop at the foot of the gates. It lifted its head and pawed weakly at the air.
"Fire,"
he said in a low growl. Another volley of flaming arrows carved a shallow arc through the night and found their target. They hit the blankets with wet slapping sounds, and instantly a wall of flame engulfed the gate. The size and intensity of the conflagration was unlike anything he had ever used to burn out a criminal. A single scream from the horse erupted above the roar of the flames, and then faded. A few seconds later, the jugs unbroken in the horse's tumble exploded and showered fire out into the courtyard. He laughed in surprise. The witch knew how to make fireworks. Behind the wall he heard shouts of fear and urgent calls for water, but he knew they would never be able to stop the blaze. The slots they had cut out to pour water on the gates would never allow enough water to put out those greedy flames. And who could stand the choking smoke that poured over the archway? There would be no more resistance while they attempted to save the gate. His fight would come soon. He clapped a hand on his lieutenant's shoulder.
"That is how you get foxes out of their dens."
Tobin saw the horse barreling toward the gate and felt his heart sink with dread. He let out a sigh when the carcass touched the gate without effect. But when the archers knocked more flaming arrows, he acted on instinct and pulled the boy beside him to the floor, shielding him with his own body. Fire shot up through the sluice where the boy's face had been a moment before. It jetted through the hole with such intensity that Tobin feared it would scorch him through his clothes. The defending archers were already running down the stairs on either side of the gate. One of the younger boys fell backward and landed on the men below. The smoke began billowing up on either side of him and the boy, surrounding them and obscuring everything. He rose to hands and knees, but he could not see over the side or to the stairs.
"Tobin!"
he heard Noman's terror-stricken voice through the smoke.
"I'm all right," he shouted, "but I can't see the way out."
"Jump toward my voice," Rhys yelled. "We'll catch you."
"The boy first,"
he managed before the smoke choked him and made him cough. The boy who had encouraged him before looked no less courageous. He winked, then leapt and disappeared through the billowing wall of soot.
"We've got him," Noman said.
He held his breath and jumped. Scalding grit peppered his face before he felt cool air, and then he opened his eyes to see Rhys flying toward him. The brute did his job, taking only a couple staggering steps when their bodies slammed together. Rhys set him down, and Noman pulled him close, whispering prayers of thanks.
Next time you stay on the ground, where it's safe,
Rhys said. The line of defenders had fallen back from the blaze. Xander stepped up from behind them.
It won't be safe for long, he said. There's magic in those flames.
He stepped aside and put his arm around the boy, who grinned and held out a cup of water.
This is Crispin, the one you saved.
Thank you,
Tobin croaked, taking the cup and gulping it down.
Thank you, the boy said. If you hadn't pushed me down, my friends would be calling me Crispy.
Oh, I like this kid, said Rhys. Brother Hart, I thank you as well,
Xander said, bowing.
You have performed the first act of bravery on a night that will likely see many.
It was my duty, part of my oath,
Tobin said. He turned to look back at the gate, engulfed in flame and smoke.
What do we do now?
Rhys asked.
It's our first siege.
Noman slapped the back of his head.
You've trained for this.
We do what we can to prepare, Xander replied. The gate should hold up for a couple of hours. If we're lucky, they'll wait until it's burned most of the way before attempting to breach.
Do we have anything to form a barricade?
Said Tobin.
Exactly what I was thinking, Xander said.
He called a few men forward and told them to find all the carts and spare lumber around the camp. Then he turned back to Tobin.
Would you do me the honor of supervising the construction, brother?
I'd be honored, Tobin said. I'd also like a few shovels and picks.
What do you have in mind?
Maybe a way to slow down our invaders and press them against their own bonfire.
Tobin borrowed Rhys's staff, then drew in the dirt. An hour after midnight, Tobin and his team upturned the final cart for the barricade. They had dug a semicircular trench behind the burning gate, heaping the dirt into a makeshift rampart before constructing the wall of debris on top. It gave them cover and a height advantage for when the gate crumbled, and that would happen soon. Already there were holes and gaps where the intense fire had burned through. In another hour, the charred wood would fall under its own weight.
An excellent job for hasty fortifications, Xander said more plainly than usual.
I hope it holds them back long enough to thin them out, Tobin said. Thank you for trusting me.
You showed you deserve it.
If I might make another suggestion.
Xander nodded, and Tobin continued.
When they come through, the fire will be low enough that we can access the lower stairs again. Post your archers on the flanks, and Captain Fallon will be caught in a very tight trap.
For such a gentle man, you have a dangerous mind for tactics, Xander said, giving him a conspiratorial look. I wish I had a dozen like you and your friends.
Tobin felt a rush of pride at the compliment.
Unfortunately for me, your battle is over tonight.
What?
Tobin was taken aback.
But they could come through at any moment, he objected.
Then he saw the flaming pillar over the strange old man's shoulder and understood.
Yes, Xander said. You are called.
But we must stay and fight. Captain Fallon pursued us here, and we brought this danger on you.
I appreciate your sense of duty, but this is no longer your fight, Xander argued. Even in the heat of battle, the king's call must be answered.
There was no room for discussion in his bearing. Tobin hesitated, looking at Rhys and Noman.
Do not think that your presence will sway the battle, for we were never defenseless.
Xander saluted both Tobin and Rhys, then waved a hand as if to shoo them away.
Go, or I will have you bound and carried to the king.
Rhys tugged on his arm.
Let's go. We still haven't met this king we've been looking for.
Tobin turned to follow, and realized that Noman remained standing beside Xander.
Dane Goodman,
Tobin said, searching his teacher's face for an explanation.
I have been your teacher, but now I am only your friend, Noman said.
He took a deep breath before speaking again.
I pledged my life in ignorance, to a purpose and to a god whom I did not know. I had gazed upon the shadow, but not the figure that cast it. I spent my life searching for answers to questions I did not understand, and teaching my fumbling knowledge to young men like you, so they could also pledge their lives to that god and that purpose. And where I thought I had travelled so far down this path that the answers must be just over the next rise, I see that I was caught in a thick briar that I had planted myself. All along what I was searching for lay under my feet, buried where I could not reach it. But Xander has shown me a different way, and I intend to follow it.
That is a long way to say you're not coming with us,
Tobin said. He would have seen this coming if he weren't so worried about Kurian, but he was not entirely surprised. Still, it pained him.
No, Noman said, I am not. I can teach you no more, because I am just as much a student here as you are. After speaking long with Xander, I feel almost like a child again, like a new man. In fact, I think it would be a fitting name. How do you like the sound of Newman?
The dean spoke with a wistfulness Tobin had never heard, as if he were distracted or dreaming. Then he shook his head and focused on Tobin and Rhys again.
What about rebuilding the Order?
Asked Tobin, stifling a sob.
Xander has convinced me of a better plan. You will understand more when you find Kurian, and I think you will see why I should not join you. I am still too much a man of the Order for what comes next.
Noman came close and embraced them both, then gently took their staves, saying,
You will not need these where you go.
We will miss you, Dean, Tobin said.
As long as I survive tonight, we will soon be reunited.
Rhys pulled on Tobin's arm again, and they turned toward the beacon, then jogged into the dark, away from one fire, and toward another.
Fallon's siege is on, and even though the boys are being called away, we'll still get to see how it goes for the captain. But what mission will the boys be given? Join me next Friday as the Treasure of Caprick continues. Now for that word of wisdom. In the opening verses of the book of Joshua, God gives marching orders to the man who is taking over for Moses. In verse 1:9, God says this, Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid, do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. It's the third time God encourages him to be strong and courageous in three verses. So it's obviously important. This type of encouragement is repeated throughout the Old and New Testaments. It's not just in the specific commands to be courageous, but we see it in the lives of the people we look up to and celebrate as heroes of the faith. Nearly every admirable and noble act within Scripture comes from a person faced with a pretty difficult or a dangerous choice. And as far as I can remember, that choice almost always boils down to choosing between courage and cowardice, between faith and fear. Sometimes it might look a little bit more like faithfulness versus temptation or righteousness versus sin or something like that. But if you think about it, even our temptations are usually based in some form of fear, or at least that's one of the triggers. Fear that we'll miss out, fear that God's path or the path that he is offering won't work out, or it won't be good enough, or fear that choosing the thing that we think is right will cost us too much. Moral action always requires courage, even when it seems simple. And usually a good bit of faith comes along for the ride. I think that's necessary in part because we live in a challenging and dangerous world. And it's a world with many threats where the easy path often looks like our best chance of getting away unscathed. But something in us usually tells us that it may not be the right path. I bring this up today because of Tobin's moment before this battle begins. He's genuinely surprised by his own boost in courage and his feeling that he's willing to die for these people. And he comes to that conclusion because he sees what he thinks is a worthy cause. It's a clear instance of the innocent being attacked by a vicious and powerful man. It's sometimes easier to feel courageous when you find something that feels like a cause of justice. Or sometimes just because something captures your personal imagination or your ambition, and suddenly you're willing to do things you weren't willing to do before. Either because of fear or because you just didn't see the value in it. For a lot of people, finding that thing that feels like their soul's purpose can ignite a level of courage that they've never seen before. For other people, finding that thing that we feel like we are most made to do can be terrifying. And so it definitely requires more courage to overcome that. I really don't want to discount those examples of courageous action, because it does. It does take courage to act and to go out and attempt something in the world when you might fail. Genuinely, it takes courage to risk. However, I have to make the distinction that showing courage because of a rise in passions does not necessarily mean that the cause or the acts are righteous. Many people have bravely fought for unjust causes or causes that appeared to be righteous but were based on complete lies. In my own view, the past few years have given us numerous examples, but history and literature are both full of them. Courage simply means your heart's in it, whatever it is. Everybody can recognize cowardice as a vice, but courage is a virtue that can very easily be twisted and corrupted for evil ends. And many times the person engaging in that corrupted virtue is mostly unaware or completely unaware that their deeds are actually wicked, and they're putting themselves in danger. In the call to courage that Joshua receives that I read earlier, there's a promise that God will go with him and the rest of the Israelites. But that promise is conditional. It requires obedience to God's law, to his character, and to his commands. And it requires that, in order to do that, they have to be familiar with his word, which points kind of back to our segment last week. So this is kind of the sum up of the wisdom I've got to offer today. By all means, have courage. Put your heart into something and do it valiantly. Don't be a coward. But take heed that your courageous action is for a purpose or a cause that is righteous. That could be some great event or great cause, some big change you want to see in the world. Or it could be as simple as doing your job with excellence, raising your children with virtue, being kind to your spouse, or something quiet and interior, like refusing to believe something that is popular but untrue. One thing that can help us avoid using our courage for evil is binding it with a true faith, you know, one that is clear on right and wrong. But after that, it still takes practice. We gain the strength to be courageous in the big things by being brave enough to do the small things rightly. When we slack or when we do the thing that is easy to do but not the right thing to do, even like lying to ourselves about something, we actually lose a little bit of courage. But when we do the right thing or we tell the truth on small things, we grow our courage like a muscle. And combining it with faith, when we do the courageous thing with faith, then we know that the promise is true. That when we're valiant enough to do things God's way, he will be with us. Always. Thanks for listening to my thoughts. I hope this segment is encouraging and put some heart into your life. I would love to hear if you have any questions or comments about the content on the show or the story itself. You can send me a message or leave me a voicemail by going to brandonwilborn.com/contact. Thank you again for listening. And if you're enjoying the show, please give it a 5-star rating and review. And then please share the show with whoever is in your fellowship of fantasy fans. That's all for this week. Until next time, Godspeed. The Treasure of Capric is also available in print and ebook formats from all major booksellers. Find a link to your favorite retailer in the show description or go to brandonwilborn.com. That's brand on, not brand off, and Wilborn is as simple as you can make it. WILBORN. This has been The Treasure of Capric, Book 1 of The King of the Caves, written and narrated by Brandon M. Wilborn. Copyright Brandon M. Wilborn.